My name is Colonel Ethan Diven, and I'm today's host of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of the Operations Group at the National Training Center here at Fort Irwin, California, as part of the NTC's Warrior Chronicles. The Gauntlet drives warfighting by talking to leaders from our joint force about the crucible of ground combat, leadership, training, and fighting at the crown jewel of our Army. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Captain Michaela Lang, the Military Police Observer Controller Trainer here at NTC, and discussing how military police can support and be force multipliers to maneuver forces conducting large-scale combat operations. She's got observations and lessons from over 13 units that she has integrated and enabled to be more effective here at the NTC. The utilization of MPs in the fight can provide a vital asset to security and mobility support operations. Michaela, thanks for your time today. Can you please introduce yourself personally and professionally?
Thank you, sir. My name is Captain Michaela Lang. I, as he said, am the Military Police Observer, Controller, and Trainer here at the National Training Center. I've had 13 rotations as an OC, as well as experience as a rotational training unit at both JRTC and at NTC as both company commander and platoon leader.
My broad observations, and I want to bring in your draft article that is trying to educate and really highlight the role of military police as we transition to large-scale combat operations. So you have MPs. Kind of now what? You know, what are leaders supposed to do with them? How can MPs better enable and integrate themselves into large-scale combat operations? You address a couple of things. First, we don't do a good job collectively of integrating, creating the environment, or bringing them on. What have you seen?
Yes, sir. So integration is absolutely a number one issue that we see here, and it's normally something reaching out to units well in advance about. It begins at the IPC, but it can begin even earlier than that. It doesn't have to be perfect. It can be integrating into training meetings, into communications rodeos, maintenance rodeos, and other events, but it's also conducting rehearsals and integrating into the plan, conducting capabilities briefs so we know both what the military police soldiers can do, but then also how military police can nest into mission essential a task that the brigade might want to accomplish to achieve their objectives. So it's really a dual-headed sword instead of one element saying they want to do one thing and another element saying they want to do another. We've seen great success in the integration when it's done correctly, sir.
And probably only if we know the capabilities that the MPs can bring so we can align them to the appropriate kind of task with a purpose that enables the brigade. We throw the term rear area security out there and want to rapidly just sprinkle some MPs on it and think it's going to take care of itself. What have you seen with respect to giving MPs a rear area security task?
That is generally exactly what happens. We generally put the task as rear area security and we let the military police go. And so it goes on both once again. So it's up to that military police leader to be able to communicate their capabilities. But what we've seen a lot of increase in GLOC security operations, and how they're doing that is through checkpoints, observation posts, mobile patrols, route regulation enforcement. There's many different ways to execute GLOC security, and then in order to enable and maintain brigade op tempo. And then in addition, the task and purpose that they're receiving. So what we don't want to do is just rear security and throw it out there. We want to be giving them legitimate task and purposes. The most common ones we're seeing are going to be secure, control, delay, and detect. And obviously, it's important that we understand the rear security boundaries and how they're going to change throughout the phase of the operation, because that'll change how many MPs we're going to have, because that's going to change that task and that purpose that we're able to accomplish. And then with that, establishing response forces as well. What we generally coach MPs here is to establish areas of responsibility so that they're able to act as a response force quicker within them. So they might be able to execute GLOC security, but then also execute response force operations along that GLOC if needed, or within that area of responsibility that they have. We've seen great success with that. A lot of spoiled enemy attacks on logistical convoys because of these operations that the MPs are doing in the rear area.
You highlighted two coaching points that we try to drive at Echelon. One is battlefield framework and geometry, so identifying where those key areas of responsibility are, as well as starting with the red pen first. What is the threat? Then aligning the right force to respond to it. I can see enabling fixed site security around the brigade support area, potentially at entry control points during periods of high traffic. That's also probably a little bit of traffic control. Potentially is the division log pack is probably arriving. The enemy is watching and knows that's a period of vulnerability, a lot of traffic. Also, with those contested ground lines of communication that you highlighted, potentially securing those as forward support company distro platoons, as well as the alpha distribution companies, moving from the brigade support area forward to that logistics release point. That probably provides another opportunity for MP integration, is security around where that logistics release point is for a finite period of time as well.
Absolutely, sir. So another thing we talk about a lot is that protective sustainment and how we're going to prioritize that. We've seen it absolutely work out successfully where you have an MP element located at the BSA. Generally, what we've seen great success on is if they have some type of counter SUAS capability to allow and help protect the bubble there. But what we've seen really work out well, the light fight, you need a leadoff hitter there. Here, you might need a cleanup hitter. So we need a little bit more to our forces as MPs here. So we highly recommend MPs getting any anti-armor capabilities, and that's going to help them change that delay into a defeat or a detect into a delay, depending on what forces they're going against with the enemy. And we've seen phenomenal outputs when MPs have anti-armor capabilities, but then also counter SUAS and UAS capabilities, which as we look to the future, we might see in more and more and looking at protected sustainment in the future, especially with protection in the military police regiment. What we're looking at is creating those UAS, counter SUAS bubbles in order to protect the GLOCs to enable the friendly forces freedom maneuver that you're talking about right there with those logistical convoys there.
One of the most challenging warfighting functions to wrap our heads around at the division below is the protection warfighting function. Just assigning responsibility for that, whether it's the system brigade engineer, we have a provost marshal that is either a KD complete lieutenant, a pre-KD captain, or even a KD complete captain, getting them into the brigade main command post early to enable planning, the development of the prioritized protective list, and then agreeing on what capabilities need to go where. What have you seen kind of as best practices, you know, during your 13 rotations?
Each rotation comes with different enablers. So sometimes we have MSHORADs, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have the PPL entirely occupied and secured by certain assets, and sometimes the MPs are put on the top three. It completely depends on the rotation, but what we've seen work successful is assigning, let's say you have an MP company, and assigning each squad to a different location. So the brigade main, for example, doesn't need an entire MP platoon, generally not. So you can put an MP squad there. The BSA, that probably needs more of a platoon, but instead of having them all at the BSA, you have them executing operations from that BSA, and then you have that final platoon conducting GLOC security within the rear area. So the elements at the BSA are also acting as a response force as well as the ones conducting GLOC security, and then you have the remaining squad at the brigade main. That's just two locations that are generally on the PPL. We've also seen critical site security, whether it be with Sentinels or another type of asset that we have. Generally, those are going to need less as far as the manpower goes, but you can kind of, it depends on how you have, whether you have a company or a platoon, but having them arrayed throughout the battlefield instead of all of your MP forces securing maybe a CTCP 30K away in the rear is where you're going to see your greatest gains, is having them spread out throughout the rear area.
How about movement control as units conduct reception, staging, and onward integration, and then move out to their tactical assembly areas, and then ultimately begin major combat operations in the offense or through a breach site once multiple lanes have been opened?
So movement control, as you said, sir, generally the first thing they're going to get when they get here is, all right, you're going to do TCPs going into the box and maybe coming out of the box. And while that is absolutely something we can do, we do need to be looking at support to breach, support to gap crossing, as well as passage of lines, because the MPs can absolutely mitigate traffic control issues, but then also fratricide prevention. They can help support in that. So with movement control, the three things we coach is integration, prioritization, and authorization. So as far as integration can go, the MP, the provost marshal, as well as that senior MP leader need to be integrated into that plan. They need to be at the cars. They need to be at these discussions where they're talking traffic control, because they need to know who's the priority. Let's talk point of breach, for example. Is it going to be the CASAVAC, or is it going to be another force moving through? Because if there's only one lane of traffic at that point, it's going to determine who's going to come through at which time. Talking authority, who has the authority to change it? So, for example, we might have a battalion S3 come through in a tracked vehicle and say he wants to take the wheeled route, or vice versa, which could potentially cause traffic issue. Are the MPs the authority to stop that, or is it somebody else? So those are all little things within movement control that become very, very big things. And then as far as support to breach goes, how we generally coach, and it's kind of the same with gap crossing, though that takes a little bit more, especially with engineer equipment parks as we're looking at LISCO, but support to breach, for example, that MP leader should be co-located with the breach force commander in order to help mitigate any issues, or at the split site of the two different routes that they're going to take, depending on how many points of breaches they're going to be. And then conducting those rehearsals. So generally we recommend MPs, an MP squad or an MP platoon, depending on who you have, are task organized as part of the reduction force. And they go forward to the last point of cover and conceal. They're rehearsing with them so they know the triggers. And then as soon as it's reduced proofed, sometimes not even marked yet, sometimes marked depending on what you prefer. And then the MPs work backwards from that point of breach. They tag out the engineers so they can move forward to the next objective. And then they control traffic from that point of breach back to the split where the MP leader is. And then depending on the situation, terrain, they can help escort if needed to and from that point of breach. And then as well as far side, once that's established, conducting traffic control both for that two-way traffic.
And those are the tasks that MPs can do. What is the task that we often default to and just expect MPs to do?
The thing that generally MPs get defaulted to is going to be detainee collection points and traffic control points. So DCPs are generally the first task and then TCPs being the second. To better utilize MPs during a DCP mission or one that there's a potential for a DCP mission, is to understand it should be a be prepared to task, especially at smaller levels. So they can facilitate a traffic control point or other operations and then establish a hasty DCP as needed. For example, you can have MPs conducting MP support to breach, doing checkpoints, holding areas, route regulation enforcement within this task, and then have them all prepared to take detainees as needed, whether it be enemy prisoners of war or elements like dislocated civilians that may need to be rerouted. A way to mitigate risk in detention operations is by having MPs a little bit closer to these operations to facilitate the hasty DCPs so that frontline units can move forward after conducting point of capture operations. So this creates more of an adaptable plan instead of having MPs waiting around for EPWs that might never come and allows them to be a little bit more preactive. In addition, it's really important that we understand as a force that sustainment and transportation for detention operations at speed of the rear may not be feasible as it was. So we may have to be prepared to hold these detainees EPWs longer than we have in the past.
So how do we better utilize MPs, not just to, hey, go conduct traffic control operations out there, establish TCPs? Because there's another condition of the environment, which is a high, potentially a high number of enemy prisoners of war. So managing that flow as well.
And so looking at EPWs and detention operations, having them closer to the flood. Now, I'm not saying put them on the flot. However, having them closer will allow maneuver units to maintain that tempo because now, okay, MP checkpoint right there, you're prepared to take these detainees and establish a hasty DCP can be very quick. And now that maneuver force can move forward and the transportation is a lot shorter. Whereas if you have MPs all the way back in the rear area, way back maybe at the BSA or something like that, which is a great spot somewhere near to put the improved DCP, obviously not inside of it, but it's going to take a long, long time to get them. And now that brigade or that maneuver battalion or squadron company is going to get held up because of those detainees, because speed to the rear might not be a thing in the future, especially in certain LISCO campaigns that we look at. Speed to the rear might not be a thing. So it's important that we have not just MPs up there, but we understand the transportation and sustainment requirements that it entails, and having them closer will help out significantly to hold them.
What have been your kind of key takeaways if you got to communicate to brigade leadership, MPs that are coming here, and adjustments to or updates to doctrine that are coming?
The three main takeaways from this are, so first is for brigade and division staffs that will have or have MPs operating with them, is how to successfully integrate, employ, and array the MPs to best act as a force multiplier. Number two is for MP leadership that's supporting these organizations. So it's important that we understand higher mission and intent and nest our METs within theirs to accomplish, as well as best provide our capabilities to be force multipliers and not anchors throughout integration and understanding. The third one is really doctrine. So it's always evolving. We saw great updates updated in the military police operations that was just recently updated. And this aligns a little bit better with the current operational environment. But then under the umbrella of doctrine, that was really looking at improvements based off modernization of MP combat power so that commanders can know what they're getting. And then capabilities aligning with reality and ensuring that they match not just reality and what that platoon or company is bringing, but also doctrine throughout the Army, not just MP doctrine. In addition, FM40 to include detention operations, as we mentioned earlier, with sustainment and transportation, as it's not going to be an easy task looking at the future. And then finally, in protection, really both nesting MP doctrine into it a little bit more with police intelligence operations. So it's often a discussion in MP groups, as it generally leans a little bit more towards the law enforcement side. However, potentially looking at police intelligence operations in the LISCO fight and helping maneuver during operations by driving and getting these CCIRs approved to really help drive operations. We've seen it work out well in a division rotation where we had PIO applied during combat support operations and helped out significantly, not just in protection, but in also in the intelligence warfighting function.
And you started off our conversation about integration, and you mentioned at the initial planning conference, the IPC, is a great time to talk about what forces are going to be involved in the specific rotation so that integration can happen early. And then during the leadership training program, if the MP leadership is able to continue to work with the brigade staff, an awesome opportunity to do plan and prepare, and then some rehearsals up to 180 to 90 days before the rotation. But worst case, if they arrive on the ground and the first time that any of the units meet each other in the intermediate staging base, there's still an opportunity to capabilities brief, who the leaders are, and then opportunities and where leaders should be and how they should integrate to the staff. That's kind of what I'm taking away from your comments, is a lot of opportunity. We should have to take advantage of it and make sure we know what MPs bring, the capabilities and the skill sets that they are best built to align against. But we also need to update MP doctrine a little bit, I think is what you finished with. Yes. What are the changes that you anticipate coming in the future?
Ultimately, modernization of capabilities and doctrine. So getting a clear understanding of what MPs will have and how we nest within maneuver to execute instead of planning and operating independently. We don't want to be independent groups and at the end trying to piecemeal it together. We want to be operating throughout together.
And with rotational design, do we at the NTC have the ability to train and really integrate company, platoon, and down to squad size organizations from MPs?
So in the past, we focused a lot on MPs within stability operations, and we can still do that, absolutely. But we can also be looking at being force multipliers in both offensive and defensive operations through the tasks that we've listed during the podcast and the others, as shown through how MPs have improved and seen great results in both support to mobility and security operations. So for example, mobility operations, we can take more advantage here at NTC conducting support to breach, clearing, gap crossing, and passage of lines. Every now and then we'll have our unit that tries to do them, and they do very well, but it's something we can look at a little bit more. And then in addition, support to security operations, so we can look more at critical asset security, lock security, convoy security, and response force operations.
And for senior trainers and brigade commanders, making protection a really discrete and detailed training objective, a condition of the environment for EPW, civil disturbance, movement control, those opportunities out there drive, the way that we build the scenario and ensure that we get MPs integrated and provide that great opportunity for those soldiers. Any final messages?
Whether it's looking at the PPL, civil disturbance, any type of support to mobility or security, MPs have spoiled and prevented many larger engagements here at NTC in the past year and a half. And we've seen prevention of attrition of force directly on the battlefield because of what MPs have done. But we must integrate into maneuvers training plan and focus on task organization and proper task and purposes, and we'll continue to be successful out here, sir.
It's a really great answer, because what I'm getting from you is MPs have absolutely been a force multiplier. Earlier integration is always better, but super flexible and responsive to the environment and conditions of the battlefield as it has changed. So Captain Lang, I really want to say thank you for your time today. You have MPs Now What? Observations and Perspective as a Military Police OCT here at the NTC. Your insights, your observations have been incredibly valuable, not just, to units that are training at the NTC, but really the broader maneuver support and really the MP Corps. So thank you for your time. Looking forward to the future fight, your assistance in observing, coaching, and really driving change for the MP Corps and the way we conduct large-scale combat operations. Greatly appreciated. For everybody listening, invite you to look at our latest products and subscribe to our TAC Talks on YouTube for quick-hitting lessons. Thank you for listening to Thinking Inside Box, The Gauntlet, brought to you by The Warrior Chronicles.